I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 502. Aaron Miller, the disc golf guy, alongside Johnny V.
Yeah, it's going to be one. It's going to be a rainy night here in Milwaukee. I think we're going to see it, but it's not raining winds, not like it is for our guest tonight.
Like from the Wynn, like the Wynn Casino?
No, not W-Y-N-N, W-I-N-N.
Hannah Wynn.
Oh, Hannah, that's, oh gosh, I was going to try.
I spell that one.
N-G-U-Y-N?
Sure. All right. Well, nonetheless, a guy that's getting it done,
by the way,
a guy that is getting it done with ease, and everybody's been waiting for it.
I wouldn't say with ease.
Well,
every one of these is contested.
He's starting to make it look easy as he continues to rack them up. Of course, we're talking about tonight's guest, Anthony Barella. AB, how you doing?
How's it going?
Am I your biggest fan, or is it the one that's above your head?
I didn't even notice that, but you're pretty big.
It's a visual joke, sorry.
All right, AB. So let's get right to the very first thing. Of course, congrats. But secondly, are you under the weather? Is too many celebrations? What's going on?
We played the course today, and I guess the allergies are just getting to me. I'm like sniffly, but I feel great.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. You sound as if exactly that. Something's
and I just woke up from a nap.
Okay. Okay. So, well, here we are. It's been a little more than 48 hours. How does it feel to have your third Pro Tour win under your belt for this season? How are you feeling 48 hours later?
I don't know. Like, we celebrated Sunday night. Then we came out to Nashville and we went out last night and just hung out. And then now it's time to lock in. Music City Open starts in 2 days, and I want to win this one too.
How is the celebration different from chess.com versus this one? Your first one, your first first Elite Series win versus your third Elite Series win. Is the celebration more subdued? Are they ramping up? Like, by six wins, are we just going to see like two straight days of partying? I mean, how does that work for you?
I mean, I don't know. I got to go home after chess.com and spend some time with my family and my girlfriend and my friends. So definitely celebrated that one a little bit more than this one. But the tournaments are just back to back now in the stretch of the season. So there's not a lot of time to celebrate.
What does celebration in Jonesboro look like?
Literally just a crew of dudes just hanging out and having fun.
Okay.
There's not really much to do there.
Well, and that's what I was thinking is, you know, I think about Brooksville, which is a very small area, you know, hour or so from Tampa, hour from Orlando or more. And I think of how tiny Brooksville is. And I think of this one as well. Here we are. I saw you in the press conference talking about the confidence and the monkey off your back and what it's meant for you. now we're at a, like a record breaking pace. I mean, what you've done has been phenomenal, but now we're officially like talking records.
Last year, three wins was already in player of the year talk. Calvin had three wins and there was, and people were saying, oh, is it Calvin or is it Isaac who has two majors? You're literally a win away from almost a lock for player of the year.
Do you think about any of this?
I haven't really thought about that. Now that I've won these, I just want to win a major. And I think if I win one of the majors, it could, I don't know, anything could happen. You never know. Gannon could win every tournament here on out and then, or someone else. But yeah, I'm not really too concerned about that right now. It's still early in the season. We got the whole year ahead of us.
Is there anything you can pinpoint this to? Like your successes, you've had three different courses, especially with chess.com being very different from, say, Jonesboro, just in the way they play, the style, but of the shots that are required. But is there anything you can pinpoint some of this success to?
I would say like my backhand on like Anheuser releases has been like my staple. Like that's my most comfortable, is just a slight turnover release right now. And the courses we played so far this year favor that shot pretty heavy. So it's just been, it's been like just my go-to.
When we look back then, because I think it was your approach on 17 specifically. But when you look back on this weekend, what shots really stand out in your mind as like, yeah, I did that. Like what jumps out at you that you're kind of most proud of?
That putt on hole 14 was like the biggest putt I've ever made in my entire career. And it just was a feeling that I'm going to be chasing every single weekend.
Hey, hole 14. When you hit that putt, even at that point, did you think you had a chance to win it? Knowing what Ben Callaway was like a hole ahead of you, maybe two at that point, hard to tell going back. And what were you thinking? Do you thinking, all right, this is it. I'm going to run this one. I'm going to birdie out and win. Or are you thinking, okay, Ben's maybe got this, or we're going to do a playoff if we're lucky.
Yeah, I thought that if I made that eagle putt and birdied out, I would have won the tournament. That was just like my thought. I thought 24 or 25 under was going to be the score to win it. Like with nine holes to play. But yeah, I mean,
what does it take for a mental reset? Because as you were at hole 12, you were even for the round. I mean, just only two birdies, two bogeys to go on top of that to bring you at even. What are some of the things you're telling yourself as you're walking off 12 and then heading in to even hole 13?
I wasn't really thinking after hole 12. I was like, oh, I lost this tournament. Like, it's not. That drive just took, I just kind of like threw it. There wasn't really much to it. Put it close, made the putt. And then after hole 14, I was looking at the scores in the middle of the fairway. And then I think one of them parred and one of them birdied. And I was like, all right, if I can just try to keep pace with Calvin and catch him, like it's going to be close. And then when I lined up that putt on 14, if I made that, I had that momentum. And that was going to be huge for me finishing out the round.
Well, how do you feel about, you know, one of the biggest storylines of the entire weekend certainly is the renumbering. Not probably so much, you know, the whole two redesign or the whole, you know, 10 change up, but just the actual reorder and the renumbering of the course. How do you feel like that personally impacted you at all this weekend?
I think it definitely helped me out because that shot on hole 18 is like something I'm super comfortable with, just powering a spike hyzer over there. And I've tried that shot plenty of times to where like the only thing that could really mess it up is if there's like a ripping left to right crosswind, but that was never the case on that hole. But I do miss finishing on old 18. That's one of the best par fours I think we play in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that new hole 18 is a good finish, and you can get the whole crowd down there, and it's right in that area where there's a lot of electrifying things happen. So I like the changes they did.
Yeah, new hole 18, obviously over the little creek, the OB everywhere. We saw quite a few people go out of bounds on that shot. Kelvin went OB there. Ben Callaway went OB there, threw it out wide right. It's a different, it's got to be a different mentality going into that one versus the old 18, where we've seen Kelvin just demolish that hole on multiple occasions. Yeah. Like he's won it on that hole. Yeah. And even this weekend, we saw him throw maybe one of the best drives I have ever seen, much less on that particular hole. He put that thing like 600 feet up the fairway, it yeah. felt, on old hole 18. So I bet you there's a different thought process, not just for you, AB, but for Kelvin, too, going into a hole where you're really comfortable versus going into that, you know, a little bit more of a touchy hole as far as OB goes. You know, it shouldn't be. It should be, like you said, a power hyzer, but... We saw Kelvin kind of clinch up a little bit and let go of it early. We saw Ben Callaway throw it way wide and you put it deep, but very safe, and gave yourself a chance just to lay up for a three.
What was going through your mind, you know, when Ben released his, you know, he had a reaction. Kelvin, you audibly heard a reaction out of him.
I don't know if he saw Ben.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you didn't. Never
yeah,
mind.
I didn't.
Yeah, I apologize. No, you didn't. Well, then I'd ask the same of Kelvin, though. You see Kelvin, and we heard something out of him as well, though. What's going through your mind when you see that?
I was just thinking, like, in my head, I was just counting him to make that drop zone putt, and I was going to have that putt to win the tournament.
Okay.
So I was thinking, like, all right, this one 35-footer is just in between me and a win, and then... Once he missed the drop zone putt, I was like, okay, this is going to be a, that's a huge relief, because now I don't even have to make that putt and worry about a roll away. Uh-huh. But yeah.
One, I don't know if it's a criticism, but someone posted today and said they're surprised there's not an OB deep line on 18. Could you see them adding that? Would you encourage that? And I don't know at what distance that is, but could you see them adding an OB deep line?
I definitely could see it. I don't think it would change what I'm doing. I don't think mm-hmm. I can throw a hyzer far enough to where it would be a bad enough shot to be OB. But yeah, I don't think it would change much, honestly, for me.
Yeah, and granted, very few people, like you just said, would have the power to not only get there, but then get, you know, at least you'd think they would put it at 50 or 60 or longer.
Hope so.
Yeah.
You know, they can't bring it in too tight, clearly, but it shouldn't come into play. However, it was just a thought that I saw out there, and like, yeah, what if there was a little bit more touch that you needed in terms of getting it over there?
There's been some talk on all of your wins. It feels like there's been a pretty consistent thing. That's cupcake on the bag.
Not at chess.com.
No, he wasn't at chess, was he?
Didn't he caddy for you at chess? Oh, I thought he caddied for you at the end of chess.com. Oh, well, that throws the whole thing. I was going to say, how does having him on the bag help? I mean, he's a player. He's a friend. He's, you know, what is the conversation between you and he like on the course? Is it strategy? Is it just someone just to sit and, you know, chat with? Like, how do you use Mr. Curtis?
Yeah, we'll just like talk back and forth about like anything. Like, we'll just be talking. He likes to tell me a lot about what he does in the holes, which is like, I don't really care. It's like, whatever.
That's the worst caddy, honestly. Everybody, nobody He's wants just, to hear what you have.
I'll rolled OB here. Cool.
Yeah, I'll throw like a shot, and he's like, I threw one like 50 feet further. And I just look at him like, what are you doing, bro? Like, I'm playing right now. But it fires me up. And like that little back and forth banner just keeps me relaxed, just feeling like just another casual round, and then helps me with the nerves and stuff like that. And it's just nice to not have to carry your own bag.
Yeah.
Clearly it's not intentional, but when I saw him on the bag in round two, I went out and looked to confirm that he was in fact playing. He had shot, I think he shot one under, one over that particular round.
Yeah.
I mean, it like somewhere deep down, are you kind of hoping that he kind of has a bad day so that he can be there and be on your bag?
I keep telling him, I was like, I don't even want you to caddy for me anymore in these tournaments. Like, you need to be playing while I'm playing. But he's just getting his stride. It's his first year on tour. It's rough for everyone. It's tough out here, but we'll get it figured out.
Yeah, it's great seeing him out there, and I know, you know, he struggled in with his timing of an event, you know, a couple events ago and everything else. But like you said, it seems to have worked out that he's out there and on the bag for you and helping you out. If he wasn't there, do you have a second pick for someone that you would love on the bag? If they could be there, who's your second pick? Or maybe your first pick over him?
Probably I would like to have my girlfriend, but she doesn't carry the bag. She just like walks there. But if I can't have them, then probably my dad. I like when caddies for me.
All right.
Okay. That makes sense. I like
is
that.
Mr. Macbeth allowed on the bag at all? I mean, we saw what happened last time he was there.
Not anymore.
No. Never again. He's out.
So that kind of
fired.
That kind of brings me to my next question. We always hear about players that have to go through struggles. I mean, Doss talks about it a lot. You know, you have to earn your stripes on tour. Do you think that's true? I mean, after we saw what happened at European Open, then you coming out here, do you think they're related? Would you be where you're at if you didn't have that hurdle? Or do you think that is just a hurdle? I mean, pretend you never went over to Europe. Do you think you're having this season?
No, honestly, I think that was like the... I don't know. I think that was like the pinnacle in my, I needed that to happen to propel me to the next step forward. And it just makes it for a better story too. Like having that happen and then coming out and winning tournaments. But yeah, I think that plays into a huge part of who I am today.
Good.
Oh, a major, of course, these have been these incredible Elite Series wins. You were that close, as we just talked about the major. Do you care what major it is? I mean, we have one in, you know, about 10 days or so, but any major, are they all the same to you or you just want one this year? Or is there one?
I want to win European Open, honestly, like more than any tournament. It's just such a crazy feeling to be out there with all those people watching and then on such a prestigious course. And I just think that would be the greatest feeling ever if I could win that tournament.
And ultimately, the sweetest revenge, probably in some sense as well.
Mm. Does that wrap up his Disney story? Like, you know, he comes back the next year, takes after winning all season, or
that's true. I mean, that's a documentary in itself. So here you are getting more comfortable with the winner's circle. Clearly, you know, playing some incredible golf. At what point are you still nervous? When is that? At any point in this weekend, name a few times where you felt legitimate nerves.
Definitely the front nine of that final round, I was pretty nervous. Is like it was like this was the first Elite Series that felt like real, because it's on like a course I've played so many times. I think I've been here like four or five times, and it's just like so much history at the property. And that plays into a huge role for like nerves and stuff like that, because I've been watching it since I was 2016, I think it was the first year Jonesboro was a tournament. So I've been watching the tournament every year it's happened, and just being there in the moment, it felt real. And then after that putt on 14, I kind of like lost all the nerves, and that was just pure confidence and motivation from then on.
You, and maybe that's a follow up, you haven't traditionally played well at that property. Is that a fair statement?
I don't even know. I don't know what place I got last year.
I feel like 20th or 25th.
I think it's a fair statement that you have not done well there the couple times you've played.
Yeah.
So
I don't know.
Yeah. Now I want to go look. I remember that was some blurb somewhere within our kind of pre-production meeting, is seeing that. I think 20th is the best that you had finished there. What was it maybe in prior years then? You know, as you said, they're almost, you can't even remember. What do you feel like the difference was in prior years when you didn't find success?
I don't know. I feel like I'm a completely new player. It's like, stepping out on these courses is like I have a whole new mindset and repertoire, I feel like, in my game, to where I can birdie any hole. And it just like I haven't had that confidence in the past. And I think that's a huge difference between me this year and last year.
Is that a lot of practice this off season? I mean, is that what it comes down to, is just putting the reps in?
Yeah, and then after Chess.com, like I didn't even go into Chess.com, I'm thinking I was going to win the tournament, but after it happened, it's like now at every tournament I'm going into it, I'm thinking like, oh, I want to win this. I can do this again and again. And it's just like crazy. It's just crazy how that one win can just completely change my entire mindset for this game.
Even comparing whether it's last year or pre-chess.com, whatever the case might be, whatever time you want to use it, go back to, what do you feel like is the biggest thing you've fixed or adjust physically? You just talked about confidence and now you can build on that, but physically on the course, like what are any of the changes you've implemented? Style, technique, form, whatever, anything?
Honestly, no, I feel like I still have the same putting form as last year. And then my drives look the same. My sidearms is just all mental. I did a lot of weight training in the off season, trying to get stronger, and then like some speed and agility stuff just to be healthier. And then I don't know, I just feel a lot better and a lot more confident in myself this year.
You roll with, a lot of our touring pros, and I guess I'm specifically thinking of time spent in Arizona, the likes of Parker Welk, who's out there, obviously Ricky Wysocki, Cupcake was over in Arizona a handful of times, all of these different people, Ezra, Gossage, like all these people are around more often. Jake Brown, all these people. Do you guys feel like, do you feel like you're learning or feeding off of each other any differently now compared to maybe 5 years ago?
Yeah, for sure. There's like every single day we could go play a practice round and like play against a real touring pro. Like me and Ricky played countless rounds together this offseason. Like we'd go like every day for like a week straight and just go play each other for like $2,800 and just simulate that pressure. And I think that constant like feeling of pressure and like wanting to win every day and like the off season definitely helped propel me forward with this mentality.
Be honest. Does Ricky try to pay you in Bitcoin when you win? It's like, bro, no, I could give, but hey, pull out your wallet. We're going to get some.
I have a digital wallet. Now that kind of leads me to my question, which is let's just make up a number and say you guys played 50 competitive rounds with something on the line this off season. That's just my number I'm going to round to. If it was 50, what was the record between the two of you out of 50 competitive rounds between you and Rick?
I have no idea. It's honestly probably pretty even.
Okay. I mean, it wasn't lopsided at all. You're saying?
No, it was pretty even. 25 and 25.
Okay. So, you guys were pretty much right up. Now, last week we had a discussion, and so has the rest of the internet, about specifically a lot of dumb things, but one was rivalry, the sportsmanship, the gamesmanship between some of our players. Johnny here, for instance, was suggesting that we see a little more tenacity, maybe a little bit more ferociousness, and maybe just a little more angst or battle. Like,
well, I basically my take was that the sport seemed a little, I don't say more interesting, but there was more excitement when we had like Paul versus Ricky. And I said, right now, our two top players are Anthony Barella and Gannon Burr, but there doesn't seem to be any of that chippiness. There's no, you know, it's all friendly. We saw Gannon Burr congratulate you on social media, and it's very friendly. Yeah. And I said, I would like to see, and maybe it's not you two, maybe it's two other people, but I'm picking the two guys right now that are dominating our sport. I would love to see more competitive fire between the two of you. Ooh, a little less friendliness, a little like, I think that could bring more, I don't say more fun, but it might bring more interest to different people and sides. Do you feel like a competitive rivalry is a good thing, or do you like it being more chummy?
I think having that rivalry would be good for everything, like good for the sport, it'd be interesting. So I don't know. I might start talking some crap about him.
There you go.
We'll see.
And that's kind of what I said, is I feel like there almost has to be a situation where somebody is somewhat dickish to the other person in some capacity on or off the course. Yeah. And I feel like that's how we would break through this, this, you know, friendly bro mentality into like, hey, I think I kind of dislike you and I do really want to beat you. So, I mean, do you want to throw any shots or take any shots right now and start talking some shit or like, cause we're here for it.
I don't have anything to say right now, but we'll see. I'll see him this weekend. We'll start a little bit thing.
There you go. Get a little chippy on social media. Start with social media and then, you know, work your way up and finally, you know.
Like, did you guys see Gannon's shoes this week? I mean, what's that clown doing or whatever? I mean, you got to start. Like, if you're going to start ripping on him, where do you think you're going to start? With what?
I have no idea where to even start.
Oh, I think you start making fun of his logo. Like, it's just a knockoff AB logo, but it's like upside down. Whatever. Okay, Gannon.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll think of something.
This brings up another question because I love how social media works. My question is, someone suggested or flat out, I think outright claimed that you hate the nickname AB.
What?
See? People don't know what the hell they're talking about.
I know, but I figured I would go ahead and get it on record. Do you in any way second guess anyone calling you AB?
No, never. My parents have been calling me AB since I was like 3 years old. So it's just like someone says AB, I think they're talking to me like every time. So yeah, I don't have any hate at all towards that, but some of my buddies like to call me Tony and that just doesn't seem right to me, but
yeah, I think Gossage, seemingly, at least from when I've been around you guys, it feels like Gossage really kind of has latched onto that more than anyone.
He likes calling me Tony, yeah.
And it sounds so damn weird when I'm in the room and he says that. I'm like, what is?
Well, I mean, we all have different nicknames for different people. Like my family calls me, they call me John John. They've called me it forever since I was a tiny little baby, and to this day, when we go to family hangouts, everyone calls me that. JV, Johnny V, like 1,000 nicknames. Terry, T-Bear, T-Bear. Yeah. Like everybody kind of has, click, you know, little things. I don't know.
Okay, well, I wanted to put it out there because, you know, it's the internet, and I just remember thinking how stupid it really sounded.
I'm going to make a point next time you guys play together online, you and Gossage, and we're going to have Tony and... It'll be Tony Barella and what's one for Aaron? I don't know.
You just call him Goss all the time, don't you?
Goss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does he like that?
I don't know. Everyone was calling him Goose, and I was like, I'm just going to call you Goss because it just sounds funnier.
Yeah, I'll talk to Mo about that. We'll get that happening on the broadcast.
Yeah. Well, obviously a long stretch. You know, you said you went home after chess.com. Here we are. You know, I know you had kind of officially off the weekend of when the U.S. Women's was happening. But now, you know, three straight weekends leading you right into Northwood Black and the Champions Cup. When is your next break? What do these next few weekends look like for you?
Yeah, I'm playing Music City, then straight to Champions Cup, and then straight to DDO. And then we have a week off.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be going back to Arizona. Then we're going to the West Coast Swing after that.
Okay, so pretty much that 1 week, there's a 303 that's a Q series, there's the Las Vegas Challenge, you know, there's a couple other events, but not from the Pro Tour perspective, and then ultimately you get out there for OTB and you're ready to go again, so that 1 week off.
And you're registered for Vegas? You plan on playing that?
Oh. I am registered. I don't know if I'm going to play yet.
Okay. Yeah, because then you don't get your week off.
I know, that's what I was thinking. You said the week off, and I looked, and I'm like, well, maybe there's something we don't know, or maybe...
a newer thing. I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, this guy's making too much money. He doesn't need to show up to these non-pro tour events anymore. For a four-day event, like that's a big commitment.
Yeah, that's a lot for an A-tier. But it is in Vegas, though, and Vegas is pretty fun.
Yeah, so I heard.
That's the rumor.
Yeah.
we'll sidebar for a moment then. You know, I've seen you in the Peoria area and a few of the other places. Name some of your favorite locations that aren't necessarily based on the play. Some of the places you love to visit.
Peoria is one of my favorite stops on tour because one of my best friends in Arizona is actually born and raised in Peoria.
Mm-hmm.
So we always get a crew of like, 10 guys to go stay in his grandpa's basement, and we're just there all week. And yeah, it's a blast. And then Maple Hill, I love hanging out there because the Economoses have the tiki course, the 18-hole putting course, and that's like, I love that. And we're usually there like every night. And then those are like the two I'm thinking of like off the top of my head, but I know there's more stuff and more like traditional or traditions we do like at multiple stops. Oh, Idlewild also. We have some great hosts at Idlewild who really take care of us. And
you over at the Arling House or are you somewhere else over there?
No, it's Mark and Don. They actually, we were supposed to stay at the Arling Houses originally like 4 years ago, but they just had too much, or they didn't have enough room for us. So Mark and Don took us in, and they've just been great.
Awesome. That is so much of what I think makes the tour life so much more fun, is these places you visit time and time again, and then these incredible hosts that you're ultimately introduced to, and then you become lifelong friends with. I think that's awesome and incredible. Yeah. Now, a few minutes ago, you briefly mentioned how sometimes your girlfriend has been on the bag, or well, is in the support role. Is there a world where she's on tour with you in a greater capacity, or is she possibly going to take some extended trips with you? How does that look for the rest of the year, and what are her obligations?
She'll definitely come out for Worlds and USCGC.
Okay.
But with her job, she doesn't really get much time off. So hopefully we can just get her out there whenever she has some free time.
Okay.
I'm sure she wouldn't mind that Europe trip. You know?
Yeah, it's too long.
Fair enough. When you do like unwind, when you turn off disc golf and you're not putting in someone's backyard and you're not, you know, doing anything disc golf related, what are a few of your favorite off course activities that you're doing with your buddies?
I love playing pickup basketball. And then I really like enjoy fingerboarding. It's just super fun to me. I've been playing tennis a lot recently. So that's like, but other than that stuff, it's just like watching YouTube videos of disc golf. And then all my friends back home love disc golf, so whenever they have free time, they want to play. And yeah, it's just like, there's not really moments during the day where it's like not about disc golf these days. It's like crazy.
I think it's funny that you mentioned tennis and not pickleball.
That was going to be my follow up,
which is like, what everybody on tour right now is obsessed with. Yeah. And okay.
Here's where it starts. Are you talking trash about all these these pickleballers that are out there?
They're old guys.
No, I played a lot of pickleball too, but I don't know. It's just like the light racket was like kind of starting to hurt my elbows, so I was like, this is like, I'm just gonna stop playing. But the heavier tennis racket, I don't know, it just feels more natural, and it's a lot more fun, honestly.
Okay. If disc golf, and I know this is a really crazy hypothetical, but if disc golf wasn't your life and your career and your passion, what are some of the other things that you think you might have, let's just assume you never found disc golf, what else do you feel like you would have aligned yourself with athletically growing up?
Definitely baseball. I would have tried to make it to the MLB if I never found disc golf.
He's already got, I mean, you've already got the MLB jersey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I mean, it just works out for you.
What is it about baseball? In terms of the game and the intrigue and everything else, what specifically is it about baseball?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just been like, before I can even remember, I've just always been playing like organized baseball leagues and stuff like that growing up. And then it just like became like an everyday thing for me, like disc golf. And I just love baseball. I love to watch it, and I love to play it. And it was just finding that passion. And when that passion switched from baseball to disc golf, I was just 100% in for disc golf.
So when was that?
Oh, sorry. No, you're good.
It was probably when I was 16. I broke my arm at a trampoline park, my left arm. And so I was like, all right, like I can't play baseball this season. And then that was like the turning point where I was like, okay, like, it's time to start focusing on disc golf, because I could throw with like my sling on and stuff, and that was the switch where I never went back to baseball and just started playing disc golf.
I was going to say, what position in baseball were you primarily? Were you a pitcher or somewhere else?
Yeah, I was a pitcher.
Okay. I think it makes the most sense for a lot of our players, it feels like, but you know,
yeah.
So this, we've got Music City coming up. What's it going to take for you to win Music City? Like, looking at that course, what are the skills required for Music City that you feel are important in order for you to win?
Last year at this tournament, I felt like it was just like about power, but this year with the changes they've made, I just played a practice round there. It's like a lot of placement shots now. So it's just being accurate. And if the wind gets up, about committing to your shots. And a problem I've been having recently is like early release and just not committing. And if I think if I commit to every single shot this week and just bring that confidence and drill all my circle one putts, I should be at least able to put myself in contention.
You know, as you said, you just did a practice round, and that makes me think about you, your buddies, and then also some of the videos that you've been putting out. Pull back the curtain a little bit to your YouTube growing and your career and maybe even what you feel like you're truly trying to accomplish there.
Yeah, YouTube is just, I think it's just really fun to make videos and like edit them and have all of my friends in it, and like it helps them out. And it helps me out, grow our brands. And I don't know. It's just like I've always enjoyed like making YouTube videos like that. Like I used to try to make videos when I was a kid, but you'll never find those. But you know, it's just
been like, are they out there? Here's the question. Are they able to be found? Like, are they somewhere out there?
Are they private or did you delete them?
Have you gotten rid of them?
I deleted them all. Yeah. But yeah, it's just like, I think it's fun and I enjoy doing it.
Do you have an end goal? I mean, you could be, and I say that because you see obviously what Simon has done, and you've seen Yuli and you've seen Drew and you've seen so many of these others, Alden Harris, you see all these different styles and everybody have their kind of different take on it. Do you feel like you have like ultimately a goal in any capacity?
I don't know. Like a goal is like, I want people to just know like me better, I guess, and just get my personality out there more. And I think those YouTube videos really show who I am as a person and just what it's like to kind of like hang around like disc golfers when they're just playing like a casual round. And I think that stuff's cool. And I've always looked for content like that in the disc golf world, but now I can just create my own and I just have a blast doing it.
Do you have a favorite disc golf YouTuber? Like, whose videos, when they come out, you're like, oh, sweet, there's a this person video.
I like the Disc Golf World. Their videos are super, they're like straight to the point and they're quick. And yeah, I just love watching them. I think what those guys are doing is great.
Okay. You talked about building your brand. We've seen obviously 3 wins, 5 events. Have you noticed a change in, we'll say, the social media that comes from your first win versus your most recent win at Jonesboro? Like, was there a big flow for that first win? Congratulations, got that monkey off your back versus the third one? Or do you feel like you're now building a fan base that, you know, if we get to 6 wins, it's going to be 2 days of alerts?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know. It's just my chess.com post. I got like 11,000 likes and that's like the most I've ever gotten. And I think I gained a lot of fans after that tournament, and it's just about maintaining them now. Like, they're all out here, and my fans want me to win every week, but that's going to be really tough. It's a lot of talent out there. But, yeah, social media, it's definitely been growing, and, yeah, I'm gaining followers like crazy. It's unreal.
Does that then, and maybe you can or can't share, does that turn into sales for you? Like, is Discraft calling you up right now and be like, bro, we got to burn more of these discs. Let's go. Let's go. Like, do you see a big influx of Anthony Barella gear being sold out of, have they released the new, I don't know if Discraft has done. Yeah. They've got their tour series.
Yeah.
Out.
Yeah. You're old. That's old news.
Bro. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I couldn't remember, but I know they also have specific pages for each player with updates. I mean,
yeah.
are you seeing a lot of that transfer into Anthony Barella gear out there?
Yeah, for sure. Like, after I won chess.com, I went to all the tournaments, Waco, Austin, and like there's always just people wearing my jerseys, and it's like it's the craziest feeling. I always try to go up there and give them knuckles and tell them I appreciate them for supporting me. And yeah, I've seen a lot more AB hats and AB jerseys, and it's a dream come true.
Have you signed any jerseys?
Yes.
Good. Yeah. Because you're talking about baseball, and I always just imagine a baseball player who signs the back of their jersey right by their name for their fans. And I think it's kind of cool. That would be kind of cool to have the AB, and maybe it's already this way, the AB jersey customizable with your own name on the back. Like we can see with baseball players. I mean, I could get a number 7 or 15 with my name on it. I would like the AB jersey maybe with my own name on it.
That would be cool. Yeah, that seems like a lot of work.
I was just going to say, I'm going to check my embroidery press tonight.
Yeah, that's what we got.
Those will be out tomorrow.
Liz, a few more wins, Anthony, and you can ask for anything you want.
You can do whatever you want. That leads me to a question in this realm, which is, where are you with your Discraft contract? As in, is it up at the end of 2024? Well, where are you within your contract right now?
Yeah, it'll be up this year. So this is my last year on the contract.
How convenient.
Yeah. Show me the money.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, that's got to feel pretty good knowing, obviously, you've already had these accomplishments this year. You're looking to just build on those and stack on top of it. But not any year's a good year to have a breakout season and this incredible start. But a contract season year is even better.
Yeah, I'm not super concerned with that right now. I'm really just locked in with the season and just trying to play my best.
Awesome.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that till like October.
Yeah.
Wait for October.
Yeah, when you got 2 or 3 majors under your belt and then you're like, show me that.
Oh, that would be really nice.
Yeah, it would. Awesome. We know you have other obligations. We certainly want to respect those and we appreciate that. So before we let you go, first of all, give us how people can and should follow you and ways that they can support you and your sponsors, all that stuff. Give us the full spiel.
Yeah, my Instagram is AnthonyBarella11, so you can follow me there. And then my YouTube, I think it's just, if you type in Anthony Barella, you should be able to find it. And then TeamDiscraft.com, if you want to buy a jersey, they're restocking on Friday, I believe. So you should be able to get, I think all of them will be available now. But yeah, that's how you can support me. Go grab a Tour Series disc, Venom.
Okay. And then is there anything else that we didn't cover that you'd love to throw out into the ether there? Anything else that we didn't ask you about or anything else you want to share or talk about?
You were there, Terry, when I won 2015 AM Worlds. Where were you this year?
That's true. I was in the booth, and just like I told you for chess.com, there, with so many of you players, you of course included, like I've seen almost all of your biggest moments in person or through my video lens or this time, you know, live, but still watching. And to see you win AM Worlds, to see you go runner up at AM Worlds first and just everything that you've done. And then to see you a year later, accept your first ever cash in Maricopa and you were still like only my height roughly. it's been incredible, man. And you know, it's not a secret that it's been awesome seeing you grow and thrive as a player and as a professional, but then also as a human. And, I'm genuinely super proud of you. I don't know. I'm your dad's age, so I think it's fair to say that. it's been this unbelievable journey, and I'm not unique when I say it wasn't a matter of if you would win tournaments, it was just a matter of when. And so to see that coming through the way it has been this year, it just makes me that much happier. So it's been an awesome journey, and I appreciate your openness and your candidness throughout all these years too, to know that anytime I've ever asked you for a favor or have a conversation, you've been nothing but gracious and kind, and it makes it that much easier to root for you week in and week out. So I appreciate that, and congratulations on everything.
I appreciate you too, Terry. I don't think I could be here if you weren't back there in 2015 filming these tournaments and just really grinding. People don't give you your flowers, but you deserve it more than anyone, I think, in the video world.
Well, I appreciate that. I got goosebumps, man.
You got flowers already on over your shirt.
I'm just wearing flowers. No, I appreciate that. Simon Lizotte said something similar of that, you know, 5 or 8 years ago in a moment. And, I do it cause I love the game, but part of this journey has been seeing you and the growth of our superstars. And, like I said, I don't take it lightly that I've seen so many of these moments, whether it's from you, Paul's young career, Ricky's young career, Paige Pierce's career. I think I've been there for like 85% of her major wins. It's been incredible to see this journey.
Old.
Yeah. It's been incredible, man. And, nothing but love and respect. And I see your family and what your family means and what your family brings week in and week out as well to your support network. And it's been just awesome to see. And we're right there in your corner as well. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thank you for joining. You know, you're welcome here anytime. You don't have to win, even though it seems like a habit for you, but you're welcome anytime.
Doesn't seem like he's stopping.
And anytime you want anything to share or to drop in with us, we're always here. And I look forward to the next time I see you on the course. It might be in a couple weeks at DDO, probably. Maybe we'll go to the Bourbon Cowboy. I don't know.
Maybe.
All right, everyone. That's right, Anthony Barella, a three-time champion on the Pro Tour this weekend. Congratulations as he takes down Jonesboro. Have a good one, and good luck at Music City this weekend, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
All right, see ya. AB,
your Jonesboro champion, 3 out of 5 events. That is amazing.
Yeah.
Nobody predicted a season to start like the Pro Tour in general to start like this. I mean, if you would have asked anybody, is anyone winning 3 of the first 5 events? Everyone would think you're crazy. And it was like, no, there's no way. No one's winning 3.
Some people would be like, well, Kristen's probably got the best chance.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. It's like nobody's saying that on the MPO side. And even Kristen hasn't been able to accomplish that on the FPO side as good as she is. It's been this insane season. And to see AB besting these fields on different courses in different states in different ways has been nothing short of incredible.
I think really the only thing that we can... that people are looking for now out of him is to see if he can do it in a heavily wooded course.
Sure. Which Champions Cup is going to do just that.
100%. I mean, we're going to see if he can maintain this phenomenal start through a very densely wooded course. And that can get even your best players, your Isaac Robinson, who's kind of known as, you know, a very pure thrower.
Yeah. Technician.
Northwood Black will break people. And I could see XCAB winning. I could see Isaac Robinson winning, Gannon Burr. Anyone out there has the capability. It's just whether we can see Anthony Barella kind of keep up. Or even if he takes like a top three, I think he'll prove any of the doubters wrong that say that, you know, he's more of a power thrower and not so much of an accuracy, blah, blah, blah.
So. Well, I think watching him continue to be so comfortable with the mids and with the putter.
Yeah.
That is such an equalizer, because then when you're out on a course like Northwood Black, sure, there might be an alley to hit, but when he's that comfortable with, again, that mid or that putter, it is just such an advantage when some other people have to power up. He's able to lean into the power, but go with something more controllable and then hopefully get a, you know, better result. So yeah, that's exciting for us. Obviously his sights are set on Music City this weekend, and he's looking to dethrone one Simon Lizotte, Simon who had certainly some flashes of greatness this weekend as well in Jonesboro. And with that, why don't you read off our top 10 players or so on the MPO side?
Copy that, Terry. As we said, Anthony Barella, your champion, 24 under par, wins this one on the final hole, more or less. He didn't have to birdie.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Luckily, Ezra Aderholt comes in second, tied with Ben Calloway. Ben, my heart goes out to Ben because I truly thought we were going to go see some extra holes, and I thought Ben had a really good chance at winning this. And then those last two holes just really bit him. He skipped just a little late on 17, slid into the OB, and then on 18, just flat out shanked it, just threw it way wide. It just, I don't know if it was a nerves thing, a misplay of the wind, just missed his angle on the throw. Ben's a very one of our best throwers off the tee. So to see him do that was actually a little bit of a surprise to me. But ultimately, there's, you know, you can't argue too much with a tie for second with Ezra Aderholt and Calvin Heimberg. So, as you know, Calvin coming back to Jonesboro and continuing his streak of top two over the last, 5 years now? This is the fifth year in a row he's taken top two.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations to Calvin, who, again, had a chance to at least push it into extra ones, maybe even, depending on how it looked, a chance to win, depending on that final hole goes, that 35-foot putt from that AB was going to have to hit. It's not a gimme. It's what we like to call a knee knocker a little bit, but he probably would have hit it. We would have seen some extra holes. In fifth place, as you said, Simon Lazat, finally kind of coming out of the season. He hasn't had a really great start to the season, but this course, I think, really plays to a lot of his strengths. Jonesboro, there's not a lot of danger to get into. As long as you keep
most of the holes.
You're right. It's just a straight on fairway. Like, hit this fairway, hyzer, anhyzer, whatever you need to do. It's not like you need to carve lines. And I feel like, while Simon can carve lines, this type of course really is beneficial for Simon, unless he's throwing 600 feet in the air and only 50 feet in front of him. Those are tough ones.
Yeah,
as we saw him do on one of the holes out there on that final round. Sixth place, another player we haven't talked much about, but it kind of goes to the course. Albert Thom shooting 21 under par. So only our top six players are separated by three strokes. In seventh place, a tie with Chris Dickerson, Gavin Babcock, and Gannon Burr. And then a two-way tie for 10th place, Mason Ford, who's, as we mentioned, I think 2 weeks ago, a really good start to this season for Mason Ford. Just very consistently in that top 10. At one point, usually in the conversation, he wasn't really in the conversation to win this week going into the final round. But, man, just a good season to start with. And then, as we talked about as well, Isaac Robinson, who, this would not be a course you would normally pick Isaac Robinson on because it is more of a power thrower course. And while he's not shy with distance, as none of our top players are, it's not what people think about for him, as well as there's a few spots out here where a forehand doesn't hurt on a few of the approaches and such. And Isaac, while he can throw a forehand, again, not known for his strength, but a top 10 for Isaac Robinson, getting maybe that slow start behind him for some of these upcoming events. We're going to move over to FPO now. We're going to talk about Kristen Tatar, who won this after the first round, basically. I think after the third round, she shook hands and said, thanks for showing up for rounds two and three, ladies. She came out with a 1044 rated first round. The next closest was a 999. I'm sorry, 999. 999. Yeah, I was right the first time. 999. So she bested 50 points. 50 point rating swing. 45.
Just six strokes.
Yeah. I mean, and at that point, I think everyone knew, as we said, Jonesboro isn't the type of course where you're usually getting into a ton of trouble.
Like, the wind tried to do what it could.
Correct.
For all of our players this weekend, and it certainly wreaked havoc on a number of throws.
Yeah.
And then the side slopes and the baskets
rollaways
on the hills also are looming. When we did the quick math, there are just two holes that have flat, flat greens. Two, only two, where you're almost for sure not going to roll away. And obviously things can still happen there, but there's only two flat greens out of 18 on that course. So every single putt has the chance, some holes more than others, of course, but every single chance, every single putt has the chance to hit a basket or underneath the basket and then get up and roll away 20, 30, 50, 100 feet. Only two flat.
Well, and that's one of the advantages, not that she took this advantage, but one of the advantages of being out so far ahead, you don't have to run at those if you don't want to.
Yeah.
And granted, she still did, but and she usually hit them. The players that are usually picking up and rolling aren't the ones who are laying up. They're the ones who are hitting basket. The disc is hitting the ground and it's rolling. Sometimes that's off the tee if you're Kelvin. Sometimes it's sometimes it's from the putts. So Kristen Tatar was just in control the entire tournament. Second place, Holland Hanley coming out with a 13 under par. That's a 9-stroke difference between her and KT. Third place, Evelina Salonen at 12 under. Then there was a little drop. Fourth place, Maria Oliva, who a name we haven't really spoken about when it comes to the leaderboard this year. I know we talked a little bit about her socials and some of the issues she was having earlier in the season, but in fifth place, a 3-way tie between Eli Ezra Midling, Heide Laine, and Luke Lorenzen. So Lorenzen. Luke Lorenzen. Eli Ezra. I keep harping on this, going back to the course. This is a perfect course for Eli Ezra, a power thrower's course. And that's what she is. You know, she's young. She's still working on getting some of those touch shots that we talked about with AB, where, you know, finding that good mid range, finding that putter shot. Eli Ezra is 100 miles an hour, and this course suits that. It doesn't. You know, it's not going to get you a win probably, but it gets you into the top 10. So Eli Ezra in fifth place, taking home $1,240. Eighth place, Rebecca Cox, who again has had a kind of a quiet but good start to the season. Ninth place, Stacey Kiefer. And a 3-way tie for 10th place, Owen Scoggins, Haley King, and Silva Saarinen. So Owen Scoggins having maybe an off season. You know, she dropped whatever. She hasn't got it. She only got one win this year. Jeez. No, an off weekend. Just kind of, you know, losing to Kristen Tatar by 19 strokes just doesn't feel very own-like. But again, you might maybe rack that up to the course a little bit. She had a really rough first round. It could have been some of the wind. It's just anything. Could just be an off weekend for her. I mean, she could come out this weekend and win, and no one would be shocked. So that's kind of Owen Scoggins. And it's really, we'll get into this a little bit more, but it was really difficult to find out why she was having struggles when she wasn't getting any stats on her card.
Yeah, and one of the things that jumps out is, you know, you're thinking about Owen Scoggins literally the weekend before, going into the final round in Arkansas, tied with Kristen. Mm-hmm. So seemingly things are fine in that sense. So whatever the case was specifically for Owen, probably is a little bit of an anomaly, because obviously you look at her rating, you look at where she's been playing this year, the consistency that she's had in all sorts of different courses, and it was a very out of the ordinary weekend and experience for Owen Scoggins out on the course. Like that's all you can say about it in that sense. Like there's no other sugarcoating it in terms of she had an off weekend. Now to what specifically we can pinpoint that to, that I'm not sure of. But it was also no surprise that as soon as she was done with her round, she came back to the card, who was on hole 14, playing over the water. You saw her join. It was so funny. I even said it, I think, on the broadcast. There was a shot, and then I heard some applause of sorts or some kind of jubilation, and I thought, that sounds like Owen. And then sure enough, like a minute later, we saw her in frame. I'm like, okay, yeah, Owen's out there. And that means she came back after her round to see how it was going down on the rest of the card.
A little surprising when you know, not that she's the type to get upset and leave the course, but she is the type to be the first one to try to get to the next event.
Yeah. And I even made that reference thinking that maybe she would be done, definitely not finishing on the podium in that sense. And then I thought, wow, she's the type that would try and get the 3 or 5 hours over to Northwood Black and get half a round in. Like, she would play 9 or 18 holes or as many holes as time would allow.
And then drive Northwood to Music City.
And that's where I got myself twisted around. It's like, oh, no. They do still have a tournament before this major. So, but then I thought, yeah, she just the same would drive over to Nashville and try and get a round in. Like, that's, she's done that more than once, that on a Sunday, she'll drive already, get to the next course, to then try and get holes in already on Sunday night. So it didn't appear to be the case from what we could tell. We know she stuck around for a little while at least.
Yeah, so I mean, she's in good spirits. Clearly, there's nothing physically wrong with her. Just as someone said, sometimes you have an off week.
Exactly, and that just speaks to how high she's raised her own floor or raised her own bar, in that we just expect to see her in the top three. Mm-hmm. You know, we're contending for a win just about every single weekend here. I mean, she is the second highest rated player in the entire division. So it when you're not in the top three or top five with the dominance she has showed in the past, it does surprise a few of us. So good to see that seemingly everything's all right. Real quick, I know we you just talked about him. I'm not going to read this entire thing, but unfortunately, very unfortunately, Chris Dickerson had made a post just 2 hours ago, and I'm going to put a link to it in the chat for anyone that does want to go and read it. You can find it on either his Facebook or on his Instagram. But it starts out by saying, after having two radiologists and an orthopedic surgeon review my MRI images, there are a lot of findings. I have moderate to severe osteoarthritis in my hip. Mm. It's bad enough that it's caused multiple bone spurs. I also have avascular necrosis. This means there's a part of my hip that is not getting blood flow. As a result of that, my bone is dying. The necrosis is just starting, and it's very tiny and localized right now. My hip is apparently deformed enough that they asked if I was born with a birth defect or had been in a major car accident. I've never had any issues with my hip until the T-pad slip at DGPT Championship on October. After rehabbing it all off-season, I felt 90% better. And he goes on to talk about this, and later he uses the phrase hip replacement until I'm 50, making appointments, trying to reach out. Scroll down more. It says, this shouldn't have any extreme impacts on my disc golf career. The biggest thing right now are keeping blood flow to the area, continuing PT to strengthen my muscles around the hip, and finding a specialist for alternate therapies. My pain is minimal to none for now, and I'm hoping to keep it that way as long as possible. So anyway,
you have to wonder if just the repetitive concrete constantly throwing, if that has anything to do with, I mean, maybe he was predisposed already. Maybe he had something from birth that he just didn't realize. Maybe there's a lot of things that we don't know. And, you know, we obviously wish nothing but the best for Chris in all of his recoveries, and that hopefully he can continue to have a very long career.
Of course.
But, you know, that's got to be scary.
Yeah, I mean, it's the longest post, you know, coming from Chris that I've ever seen on any of his socials, and providing this update. And of course, nothing but, you know, big hugs and love and support and positive thoughts for Chris and his wife, Brittany, and all of his, you know, extended family and fan base, as we're fans as well. It's obviously, yeah, big deal. And I guess it's something to keep in the back of your mind. To be fair, I don't know how much this factors into, you know, some of the performance we've seen from him this year.
It could be, I mean, it sounds like he doesn't have any pain, but that's not to say that it's not mentally anguishing and hard to think about, that every time you're planting, you're thinking, well, am I doing more damage? Am I?
Yeah. And, it sounds like some of these discoveries are new. And also within here, where I kind of skipped over, he talked with Seth Muncy from the Disc Golf Pro Tour and had conversations with him, and he'll continue to have conversations. But this is, It's just wild to read. And you think of Chris, who's 28, 27, 28-ish, maybe 30. I don't want to be insulting. But he's not nearly as old as you and I, Johnny.
What are you talking about? We're spring chickens, Terry.
Yeah. So best of luck and hope everything is as good as it can possibly go for Chris. Mm-hmm. But that was posted to his Instagram and then, you know, subsequently to his Facebook or in whatever order. So we wish him the best.
It's really interesting because I think we've talked about this before. The length of the courses, the constant playing week after week after week, whether we're going to see more injuries, it might also be that, are we going to see more injuries? Cause just more people are playing and, yeah. You know, is it not the actual courses and everything, but you know, when you had 30, you know, when we were younger and you had 30 regular touring players, if one of them got hurt, you're like, whatever, one out of 30. Well, now that we've got 250 touring players, when it's five of them or six or seven of them that are injured, it maybe feels like more, but statistically, maybe it's not. Maybe it's just, I don't know. It's just something to think about.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to quickly Google was just
whether you can donate a hip.
Yeah. No.
Cause you got some hips, Tear. Your hips don't lie.
Funny enough, Shakira told me that.
Really?
Yeah. She said, my hips don't lie. She told me that. And I was like, Shakira. I think that's how I replied to her. Anyway, I was going to look. Chris Dickerson, in what we've seen from him this year, is a 28th at the chess.com Invitational, then a 6th at Waco, a 9th at the Open at Austin, and a 7th this weekend at Jonesboro. So that's what we've been seeing out of him this year. All right. Another part of the story from this weekend that is, worth repeating. And to some, if you're really hardcore, you may even roll your eyes and say, duh. Our FPO, International Contingency, continues to provide, to show up, to be so many of our stars, obviously Kristen leading that way, but Evelina proving she's figuring things out. Mm-hmm. Not everything, not permanently necessarily yet, but she is damn close enough for the opening win, of course. But just to read down the leaderboard, you have Kristen, Evelina, Heidi Laine, Luque, those four are in your top 10, finished in your top.
Silva.
So five out of your top 10 this weekend that finished.
Technically 12.
As they finished. No, technically top 10.
Well, it's top 10, but
in the top 10.
I know, but I'm saying there's 12 players.
You'd still say top 10.
You would, but you said five of your top 10. So I would, but it's 12
five
players.
Five of your top 10 spots.
There's 12 spots, at one point we had six
of them in the top 10 earlier in the round, and it's awesome. There's really no sub point or point C or B or D or F here. It's just awesome to continue to see that that parity and to see so much international representation, and the fact that clearly it's not just Finland. You know, early on, it felt like maybe it was just Finland with the way it felt like they kind of had more representation on the MPO side. Mm-hmm. But on the FPO side, we've got obviously Finland. We have Norway, Estonia. It's it's just absolutely awesome to see. So, yeah. A couple other shout outs. And I know you mentioned Rebecca Cox, certainly off to, you know, having a great start here to the season. The strongest start of the season, I guess we'll say, that we've seen from her yet. And then I made the joke that whatever Stacey Kiefer and Kevin Kiefer had for dinner Thursday night seemed to have done the trick. They both came out with stellar first rounds, and then ultimately they both fell back this weekend a little bit. But overall, as a couple, not too shabby of a weekend.
Yeah, Stacey Kiefer taking ninth place. Yeah. I think that's her. Is that her best finish of the season on the DGPT?
Yeah, outside of the, you know, she won Tallahassee. Coincidentally, she won Tallahassee as a silver event a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's
17th, 20th, 21st, and now 9th. Yeah.
Yeah. So good for them. Awesome to see. And again, kudos to Kevin, who, you know, just a few months ago had surgery on his ACL and is completely battling back from that.
Yeah, you saw him in the knee brace the entire weekend, and that's got to be we've seen as Paige Pierce is recovering from an ankle injury. She was saying that now she's just starting to finally feel really secure in that. I can't imagine. It can't be much different than a knee injury. Just the security of planting on that foot or ankle or knee. And I know for Paige, I think it's her off foot. I don't believe it's her plant foot. It's her push foot. But still, either way, it's great to see that injuries can't keep us down.
No. So, yeah, those are a couple of the, quick comments and thoughts that I had when I saw some of our players out there this weekend. Yeah, a few fresh faces, and then you would be remiss to, if we're in that category or in that conversation, Emily Beach having her best tournament here so far in the early goings of the season. So that was awesome to see as well. And hopefully we'll be seeing more. If you rewind, some of you may or may not be all that familiar with Emily Beach. We were there for the breakout event and
GBO
moment that Emily Beach had a few years ago at GBO. That's when we saw her for the first time on live coverage. That was,
she was like 16.
I was going to say that was 2015, 2016.
Yeah. I think she was like 16 or 17 years old. She was young.
I didn't realize she was that young. Possibly.
I think she was.
Okay. Either way.
Maybe 17. We'll see.
That's when we kind of initially saw her though. And, yeah. So just thinking dynamic disc / GBO, whatever, is now right around the corner as well. And thinking some people may not have necessarily known or recognized Emily, this weekend, but good to see her out there. And, she fell back a little during the final round, but yeah. Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about Jonesboro. Just, some of the hurdles that we saw this weekend. Scoring was not necessarily as detailed as some people wanted it to be. The statistics, the things that a lot of us are looking for in telling a story, they lacked scorers this weekend. It feels like volunteers, whatever the issue is, Jonesboro just, there were multiple cards that didn't have any detail on them, and it has to be addressed. Like that's one of those things. If you want to be, and we're going to get into this maybe this conversation next, if you want to be a real deal sport, you need statistics, like detailed statistics. It makes everybody's job easier, from the booth to the fans, to the players, so they can see, like, oh, gosh, it would be really nice to know what my circle one percentage is right now, but I don't know. So I think that this is a problem that the Disc Golf Pro Tour needs to solve. And it's difficult because I'm sure they rely a lot on the local tournament director to try to rally up volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I mean, does the event truly care if the statistics aren't there? Like, it doesn't affect them one way or the other in the long run.
They do.
But of course, I mean, of course they do. Everybody wants the best thing. Everyone wants their event to be the best. I get that. But ultimately, this just, I think about it in my management position. If one of the people that I rely on fails, it rolls up to me. And that's how the Pro Tour has to look at it. If the event fails to get volunteers, it rolls up to the Pro Tour and it makes the Pro Tour look bad.
Yeah. And ultimately, of course, Brad and the crew, they care. How it gets rectified, how it gets addressed is obviously the question really that's at hand for you. And I don't know what that is, because there are spectators, there are people that are out there part, you know, they have an active disc golf community and then fans that come to spectate and be part of the event. But as you're saying, we need the scores for everybody. And I understand that sometimes the toughest scorekeeping might be the first card on Sunday morning of FPO, because they might be 30 strokes back and they are not the household names and it's a 7:30, you know, start, whatever. I can understand how to some that might not seem as appealing as a volunteer base. And, but we, it, long and short is, yeah, you're right. We need to figure it out. And the same could be said on the bottom NPO card. Again, might not be your household names. You're not going to be able to necessarily see some of the other action, or it's going to, you know, work your day in a certain way that it doesn't work out. And covering the second to last NPO card doesn't, you know, get you all fired up. But you're right. Somehow volunteers have to be maybe forced into.
I think of a few incentives that we can do. We, the pro tour.
Yeah, you don't incentivize anything.
I don't incentivize anything.
Nobody wants you.
If you, I mean, you're not wrong, but that's fine. If you do one of those last cards, you're off the course by the time the lead cards are going. Maybe you get one of the lead cards then. Because if you really want to have front row seats, that's what you got to do. If you want to see Simon and Mason Ford and Anthony Burrell and whomever, that's great. Guess what? Maybe you're the guy that, or girl, that scored the 10 o'clock round, bottom MPO round, or the 7:30 FPO round. Other things they can do, I was thinking for incentivizing, some custom discs that the Pro Tour brings along. Like some exclusive custom discs, some nice, they have to be premium.
I scored second to last MPO card or third round.
Sure. No, I'm just in general, some generic, really nice premium, a really cool DGPT stamp, maybe a t-shirt as well, and say, hey, this is our volunteer package. This is what you get for scoring. And it has to be known, because it like you said, it's going to be tough in some places to get these, but I think if you can incentivize these things, it will help out. And I'm sure the Pro Tour has thought all about this, but it's just something that we need because of our next subject that we're going to talk about. And that's how the Disc Golf Pro Tour signs a comprehensive partnership with U.S. Integrity. And you're probably asking, who is U.S. Integrity? U.S. Integrity.
Not that I know anything about.
Tell me about it. U.S. Integrity is a company that actually works with major sports organizations and companies to, I don't say guarantee, but to get gambling into sports books. And in order to do that, you need to make sure that all your I's are dotted, all your T's are crossed, that everybody knows the do's and the don'ts on sports gambling. You can't. I mean, the obvious ones are you can't have players gambling on their sport. You know, so if this does make it into a sports book, you can't have Anthony Barella betting on himself. I'm going to win this one. You know, it just you cannot do it. So there has to be some ground rules. And that's what U.S. Integrity does. They work with a pretty large number of organizations. You can go out to their Twitter where they've got, I think only, which I was thinking at first, like, man, they only have like 1,400 subscribers or followers. But I'm thinking, who follows this company? Why would you, unless you're probably a degenerate gambler? So it makes sense. But they have and work with a lot of major betting institutions, as well as professional organizations. So ultimately, this is the Pro Tour and the PDGA starting to lay the groundwork for sports gambling.
Which has been met with, let me ask a question instead of guess. How do you feel like it is the camps are divided in terms of yay, this is awesome, or boo, this is terrible? Where do you feel like the straw poll response has been so far from what you've seen on the socials?
I would say 70-30 in favor of it. That's what I've seen. most of the people are like, yep, this is a natural progression. We knew this was going to come. It's fine. I do or I don't gamble. I see some people like, it'd be great to gamble on someone. And someone's like, I'm not a gambler. But there is a loud 30% contingent that are like, this is bad for the sport. We're too small. There's too much chance of people shaving strokes and this and that. It's valid concerns. But, you know, you see people as always like, oh, everyone's just trying to make a buck off our sport. Now we're going to get these live broadcasts that, by the way, nobody really wanted to watch 5 years ago that they were ripping on and they were awful. Now our live broadcasts are going to be nothing but DraftKings commercials like every other sport. And maybe that's the case in a couple of years. I don't know. I can't see the future. But I think for the most part, a majority of the people have come to the realization that, yes, this is a natural progression. Do I think it's going to bring more eyes to the sport? Probably not. Do I think it increases interest from some people? Yes. If you have a wagering interest, look at March Madness. How much less interest would there be in March Madness if there were no brackets? Do you really care about that 5-12 game? No. But you know what? You're sitting down.
If you pick the upset for $500, you sure do.
You sure do. That's right. So, I mean, if you're picking Mason Ford to upset at Music City, which he's won in the past, then maybe you are more interested. Maybe you are going to kind of pay more attention. And that makes maybe a bigger fan. In general, do I think it's going to like blow the sport up? And no, I don't. Somebody's going to try to make money off of it, obviously. You know, and then if that's the DGPT or PDGA, I don't know. But going back to the stats thing, you can do this gambling with the stats we have right now with just winners, losers, and strokes. Like, that's easy. It's the prop betting.
Yeah, that's what I, like probably most of you, are very nervous about is all of the other things. And then even and it goes all the way down to like you were just saying about the need for the statistics. It goes to C2 hits and then it not being correctly marked as a C2. And then that's easy when it's on camera and it can go get fixed. And we've talked about in UDisc, if, you know, we see something, somebody could later go back and get it changed to some degree. I think players can go change some of their stats right now. But I get the most specific example I have is Kristen made three putts from circle two in round two. You look it up right now, 2 days later, and I would bet $10 on it that it still shows she made two. It was clearly three because she jumped all three, and you could see her outside the whisker on all three. The volunteer, whomever, mismarked it as a 32-footer. But she clearly had three right there. Like, that's the easiest example just off the top of my head where you're in for a massive amount of effery is what I guess.
It could be
right there. That throws out and that's just the easiest example of a lead card of our top player in the world of something that's glaring obvious, let alone did Lisa Fakus on the third card really make six from C2 when there was no cameras there.
Yeah.
Did she make six at 31 feet or did she make six at 33 feet?
If we're going to get into
there's a lot of mess. Yeah.
If we're going to get into like the prop betting, like, oh, I think, you know, I'm going to put $100 that, you know, Kristen Tatar hits at least three circle two putts this round. It will almost be an obligation that you have professional scorekeepers, people that go with the tour, people that are trained every week. You cannot have volunteers for that. It gets too shady. It gets too, you know, if I'm
Kristen's
scoring
manager, be a scorekeeper.
If I'm scoring the fifth card, what's to stop me from before the round being like, oh yeah, Lisa Fakus, she's not going to hit any circle two putts this round.
That's what I'm saying.
And guess what? She, you know, if she's on the edge, maybe I score it inside that, you know, sometimes it's going to be hard to cheat if she throws in a 70 footer.
Of course.
But it's those fringe scenarios that you really need to work on. So you need to have a dedicated scorer for each card. Now, I'm not saying you need, you know, 50 scorers, because you could probably honestly get away with like 30, 25 or something. And then they, as we know, they circle back around, but still. Otherwise, every one of your stats gets put into thing. Now, again, you can still make bets on, similar to like horse racing, win, place, show. You could bet on over unders of strokes, like, oh, I think Kelvin's going to shoot better than 13 this round or something
sure,
like that.
There's some of the clear cut, obvious things.
Correct. I mean,
of course,
I think that's still in it. But it does open up a Pandora's box. Personally, I'm OK with it. With as far as gambling coming into the sport in general, it's a natural progression. I think we all, for years, we thought it was going to be exciting when we finally see disc golf up on the big board in Vegas. Like, oh, look at that. It's going to be awesome. Look at what we see there. People get excited when there's overseas companies that put lines on disc golfers. Does it take away a little bit of our grassroots kind of thing? Yeah, but honestly, when it comes to the tour, that's gone. When it comes to the tour itself, now you can still have, you know, Brad Peets and all of his grassroots effort to grow that area. That's all there. But when the tour itself rolls into town, there ain't nothing grassroots about the Pro Tour anymore. It is an organization. It is a company, a very well-run company that seems to be doing more and more and pushing the sport further and further. So it's the cat's out of the bag, as they say, Tear.
Yeah. And clearly you and I only know so much in general, and specifically with this, it's going to probably start with all of those really basic mm-hmm. style bets. And then from there, we'll have to see what can even get touched. But, I have a wait and see approach. Is it going to pan off? Is it going to be worth it? I mean, is it going to be funny when someone like you or I could potentially wager and make more money on the event than AB does for winning it? Mm-hmm. Like, what a funny, because you think about so many of these other sports, you think about somebody, you know, some bets within the Super Bowl, and you know that all these players are getting bonuses for mm-hmm. being there, all this other stuff. They have their salaries, their contracts, and just thinking like, yeah, somebody could win a Q series event for $3,000, but I won $9,000 because I picked so-and-so to
imagine
to
this. Down. Like, I mean, we, every year you see something like this when it comes around to like the Super Bowl or even the World Series. There's always a story about the guy who bet his team at the beginning of the season.
Sure, sure.
I put a $50 bet down that, you know, the Brewers are going to make it to the World Series and win. And it was 1,000-to-1 odds. And now I'm going to be, you know, X amount money. Imagine doing that. Imagine sitting at the very beginning of the season and saying, I think Anthony Barella is going to get 5 tour wins this year.
Mm-hmm.
And what are the, because again, you look at the beginning of the season, what are the odds of that? Like 1,000-to-1? I don't know odds very well because I'm sure. dumb and I don't gamble that much. Mm-hmm. But let's just say it's 1,000-to-1 and I put down $10. Why not? You know, and now that's looking pretty good. three out of five, he's got a lot more to go. Anything could happen. So,
And the fact that, as they're saying on the board, the fact that we are largely self-governed, you know, with the exception of a few marshals that kind of roam a few sections of the course, we're for the most part self-policed and self-governed. What can that bring into play? You got to go to an elephant in the room and say, what happens when Gannon, I hate to pick on him, but Gannon clearly takes 42 seconds on hole 17. And now there's tens of thousands of dollars of wagers on the line.
Can I wager that he's going to go over the 30
but
seconds?
But he's not called on it. You know, like, sure. Obviously all of our rules have been our rules, and we always argue, you know, week in and week out as to, you know, what they are and how they're called or applied, da, 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 da. But now you're talking, you're betting, you have a bet against Gannon, and now you're watching him clearly take 42 seconds, or Cupcake, whoever, you know what I mean, Nico, it doesn't matter. You're watching them exceed it. You're screaming at the TV because you're saying, call him. It matters more now than ever. Like, I don't know. It's And that still just may only still ultimately relate to stroke play. You have a bet that Gannon's going to beat. I'm sorry, that AB is going to beat Gannon. They're tied up there on the 17th hole, and Gannon takes 57 seconds. You are losing it more than you already do. Who knows?
Maybe.
Who knows? Anything. We'll see how it plays out. I don't know enough about professional sports betting to know how dangerous this is, but I'm cautiously optimistic. I maybe would be a fair statement about this.
Carney on the board says a percentage of all the bets should be split with the players. And I say, no.
Wow. Is that, that's not normal.
No.
That'd be crazy.
No, the way it would in theory work.
No way.
Is somehow the pro tour, whether it's through statistics or licensing or what, will make some money off this. Cause if, I'll tell you what, if there ain't money to be made, the pro tour probably ain't.
Yeah, we're not messing with it.
We're not messing with it. That money then goes back into the pro tour slash the events, whether that's the tour, we'll just play pretend, the tour championship, the, you know, all through the season. Let's say the season, everyone gets an extra $5,000 in their purse or whatever the number is. That's how it gets back to the players. It cannot be a direct cut to the players. And it's going to get filtered through the Pro Tour or the PDGA. It all depends on how things pan out with this company and in the long run. And remember, this is just step one. This is just a company getting us set up for the integrity so that we can go to these booking companies and say, hey, look, we're a legitimate sport. Here's why we're a legitimate sport. We can do, you know, we've got all of our bases covered. Let's get us on the books.
Sure. Yeah. And I guess without reading the article, there's a chance that it doesn't come to fruition, clearly.
Sure. Possible. Right?
I mean, you'd have to assume if they're the authority on it, they ultimately can say yes or no, or helping you get to a yes or no.
I think they're consultants, and their goal is going to be to get us as close as they can, and the pro tour, whoever is going to pay them. And then at some point, they'll get to the point and be like, all right, this is as good as it's going to get. Now we go to the books and we see. And I've told this story before, and maybe I'll reach out to him again because it's been quite a few years. There's a gentleman who does lines at one of the casinos, who is part of a community that I'm a part of, that listens to a specific podcast. I asked him years ago, I said, hey, what would it take to get disc golf in the books? And he told me, I could probably look it up at some point in my email, but more or less, he's like, you need a long history. You need really good statistics so that we can do a lot of research and a consistent tour of a lot of these things we have now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because we all know that, Vegas isn't putting up the odds unless they think they can make a profit. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, a lot of people look at Prize Picks that, you know, ate a bunch of dirt a few years ago when they put up some bad lines because they didn't know, you know, when you're putting up lines on Tuesday or Wednesday and the event starts Friday and everyone's looking and going, oh my God, like it's going to be crazy windy at Jonesboro. That's going to push the scores down. They didn't have that type of information to be able to adjust that because they're putting up lines so far ahead of time, probably basing them more off kind of ratings and the course and a little bit of history. And ultimately, the disc golfers took Prize Picks for quite a bit of money, is my understanding. And they pulled it. They said, okay, we're not making money on this. We're not doing it. It's not going to be like that. It's going to be more so probably your betting lines with winning and losing. Like, who do you think is going to win this weekend? You know, Anthony Barella is a 3-1 this weekend or whatever it is. And Gannon Burr is a 4-1. I'm making up numbers because I don't know gambling.
Like, yeah.
But those are the type of things that will probably happen. It won't be like the Prize Picks crap that we saw in the past. So that's, to me, I'm looking at it as two separate things. Now, obviously you've got your DraftKings and they all have sports books and getting us into like fantasy where you're paying a bunch of money to set players and you're playing against other people like a FanDuel and all there's a lot of future possibilities, but it's definitely going to be something that we're going to have to keep an eye on over the next couple of years.
All right. Well, it's a step forward where it leads only time will tell. So congrats, though, because I know just the idea of having these conversations and getting this set up to the point where it is now is obviously a significant undertaking. And maybe at some point, someone like a Sean Jack, who is probably helping lead some of this partnership, it'd be worth having him on here again. It'd be worth having him anytime. But
it's always good to have Sean on like once a year.
It would be good to check in with him on that. So maybe we'll do just that once the next step is learned or taken. All right, let's talk quickly to officially put it to bed. We could talk about Jonesboro and you want to talk about some Vegas odds. How about acing?
Oh, geez.
The same hole back to back days. Waden sides. Birdies hole 15 in round one. Good for you, Waden. One of these year holes out there. Nice work. Round two, Waden aces it. And that's how we kick off the broadcast for round two. We go right out to the course. We've got a static camera on hole 15, one of the dedicated cams for the weekend. One of the, you know, added benefits and improvements that Disc Golf Pro Tour pushed hard for to develop and to make sure that it could happen for this year. And it's paid off in a number of ways throughout different events. But hole 15 dedicated cam is one of those spots. The next day, Waden sides, aces, the same hole, same disc, same throw.
It's eerie how close, even in timing, everything is. Like from the time it leaves his hand to the time it hits the basket, it makes sense. Your same disc, probably you kind of have this. You have to almost have the same speed because you did it twice. An amazing, amazing accomplishment.
Yeah, well, watch it again. It's just insane. His mouth was more wide open in the second one. Clearly he should be in complete disbelief. No, it wasn't the same shirt. That was the first question. A yellow paneled shirt versus a black paneled shirt. Not that I would care if you're wearing a different or the same long sleeve shirt out there on a slightly windier day. Has to be one of the coolest things in our sport.
Yeah. I mean, there's back-to-back aces, which are awesome. And I don't know if we've seen that on the Pro Tour. Everyone has stories about it happening at local leagues or at a local event. I don't think we've seen it at the Pro Tour, a back-to-back ace, same card, same hole, but between two competitors. We definitely haven't seen back-to-back aces by one competitor in hole after hole.
Not on film in the Tour.
Not on film in the Tour.
Rock Searle.
Yes.
2000 Worlds.
Yep.
Got back-to-back aces in the PDGA Pro-Am Worlds of 2000 over in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Aced, I'm going to say five. Aced hole five. The very next throw was him acing hole six. Insane. Awesome in every regard. Unfortunately, that was 24 years ago. There wasn't video of either. If it was, we wouldn't be able to even see it right now. It'd be so pixelated. So certainly the props to him. And there are countless stories of people getting aces, getting multiple aces in a round, doing all this cool stuff. All of it very, very awesome. It's up like 100 additional notches when you have it on film.
Yeah, and in the same hole with the same disc back-to-back days. Like, he dialed. What did he do on the other round?
He birdied it. I said that. Yeah. So he played hole 15 in four strokes this weekend. Just think how many people bogeyed or doubled it round. Waden played hole 15 in four effing strokes total. I guess that's the question is, would it have made it any cooler just for the story's sake? Had he fourth or five, took an eight on it in round one and then done this?
No,
it's cooler that he went birdie ace ace.
Yeah. Okay. I think so. The only thing I think that would have made this cooler is if he would have aced it forehand one day and backhand the next, like walk up and be like, nah, I got it forehand. I'm going to do it backhand. And then
or lefty.
It. Or lefty could have been cool.
Sure,
but there is something really awesome about watching that video and just the the mirror of it, how identical it looks. No shock, just pretty awesome. Was there anyone on his card? I want to know if there's anyone on his card that was the same.
I don't. That's
like,
a good question.
I mean, that would be kind of cool. Like, hey, I was on the card with Wade.
Well, no, if you go back, I think we could almost see almost everybody. Yeah, I know Austin Hanum was on it second round. He wasn't on it first round. I don't know if there were any of the people. The joke that I made is when you look at how he finished out, he went five.
Oh, it was a rough end.
He went three, seven, four, or something like that in round one. I'm like, that's not far off from my zip code, honestly, when you look at it. I'll dox myself. I'm 50732. But anyway, and then he had a very similar second day on how he closed out. He birdied the next hole both rounds. That says something.
Yep. He had a rough 17 and 18 both days.
Yes, exactly. So. So impressive. Waiting and then just like to pile on to the cool story. He's 16 only. It's like his third pro tour event and only found golf like during COVID.
Well, like, when you're that was like 3 years ago.
I know.
And he's 16. So he found it when he was 13.
And the fact that here he is getting double aces in this event. Yeah, it's just all of it. Very cool. He's got a younger brother who I think is only like 14, who was also playing in the event.
Hmm.
Landon Sides is out there and was playing as well. And his younger brother is, I think, 2 years younger than him. And then just to put it out there, just so you can say that I told you someday, no relations, coincidentally, to Braden Sides, who was out in the field and playing as well. So you've got youngest at Landon. Then you've got Waden, who aced. And then Braden Sides from a different part of the country, different sides of the country.
How did we had an Jonesboro this year had an all Paul card.
Yep.
They had an all lefty card.
Yep.
How did we not have like
an all sides?
No.
From all sides.
Three sides of the story card.
There you go. Yeah. So
how do we not get that? Come on. You're failing me. You're failing me, Jonesboro, with your theme meme cards.
Yeah. So. Pretty incredible. I believe it was Matt Homie Lavasco who, in one of the years that I had gone to play in at Lemon Lake, played in a winter event. It was a winter doubles event, if I recall. It's winter singles or doubles. I don't know. I think it was doubles. He aced the very first hole, which I want to say was hole five at the time, four or five. He aced the first hole at the end of the round, aced the last hole. Mm. So on the scorecard,
back to back.
Yeah, it looks like it was back to back. It happened to be his first and last holes. But anyway, again, everybody has all these epic ace stories that have unfolded and many of them very cool in a lot of ways, but back to back aces. It's just to play one hole in four strokes is insane. Just insane out there.
Yeah.
Considering all the people that Ford in one round. Like, man,
he was more under.
It really took you nine shots to play that one this weekend.
He was more under on that hole than it took him strokes to play.
Yeah.
He was five under on that hole and he only took him four strokes to play.
Yeah. And, both rounds, obviously that's two under on one hole. I think both rounds, what did he shoot, like even or one over?
Yeah.
So unfortunately, not enough to keep him under par. Nonetheless, congratulations.
Great job.
If there's ever a time to get on SportsCenter, I don't know if it ever happened. I didn't see anything saying that it did, but if there's ever a SportsCenter worthy, scenario, that would have been it. That's for sure. Unfortunately, there's this other golf tournament going on during the weekend that probably took a lot of the shots.
I barely watched it. I watched a little bit on day one and two, but Scottie Scheffler just kind of, he had a lead. He never really gave it up. It just, I can't say it wasn't exciting because I didn't watch it. I don't know, but I kept track of scores, and every time I looked, it was like, oh, look, he's still got a three-stroke lead. Oh, look, he's still got a three-stroke lead. Oh, look, he's still got a
three-stroke. I mean, there's still other people that, you know, hit great shots.
I don't care about them. I care about the winner.
All right, let's talk. Jonesboro's officially done. Yep. Congrats to Brad Peets. Congrats to Kristen Tatar for taking down another victory, her second of the year. Lots of great stories. What else did we see out there?
We saw one other A-tier this particular weekend. It was the Daniel Bo Memorial Weekend 2, which is their open weekend. Chris Pinnegar wins this one at 23 under par, besting Max Nichols, one of our favorite lefties, by three strokes, as well as Sias Elmore, who hasn't been on tour really much this last for a while. That was your top three. And Cam Rico, yes, related to one Steve and Bamba Rico. I believe that's Bamba's son, right?
Correct.
And was in fourth place, as well as Garrett Tapkin, who it's a name I don't know. So congratulations, Garrett. That was your top five in MPO. Going down to FPO, you've got Sheila Mae Lai, who shot two under par, five strokes better than Violet Main. And third place was Sophia Donaghy. So congratulations to your FPO. And
all names you've seen over at not only necessarily the Memorial, but also at the Phoenix Ladies Open. So yeah, great to see all of them out there.
And I got to give him a shout out. We mentioned him just a few seconds ago. MP40 winning this one. Steven Rico.
Dang, yeah. Steven.
Which everyone knows him as the uncle to Cam Rico.
Yeah, maybe most known as Little Spoon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some people call
him
that.
My Little Spoon.
Some people call him that. Yeah, so congratulations, Stevie, on another win. One stroke over Chris Shotwell. Should have been Chris shot better.
Hey-o.
It's my favorite joke every time he doesn't win. Mm. I'll do it till the day I die.
Yes, I'm sure you appreciate that.
And when he wins, I'll say something like hey, it matches his
living
name.
Living up to his name.
Living up Chris to his name. Shotwell.
So clever. So clever.
He's never heard it before,
I'm sure. Get you in the booth. Speaking of the booth.
The booth.
Looking for feedback on... I don't know how solicited this really needs to be, but looking for feedback on... the companion cast.
There was
this weekend we had another one.
Yeah,
and this time over at CCDG, and I don't need any. I'm speaking high level generically. We specifically have also been propositioned to host a potential companion cast. Jomez obviously had it on their channel. It was Big Germ, and then Brian chimed in over at the U.S. Women's. Kind of a funny one at the U.S. Anyway, but then this weekend, Ian and Central Coast hosted theirs on Friday on their channel. And then Sunday, it was exclusively behind the DGN Pro model subscription. And I'm just curious how they're received. And this isn't a, hey, how much do you like or dislike a Germ or a Brian or an Ian or nothing of that nature? Just the concept is, are people utilizing it?
Well,
do people care about it? Do people know about it?
From what I saw, I looked at this was the first day when it was on YouTube. I looked at the main broadcast and the companion broadcast. And the companion broadcast at the time had, I believe it was 140 viewers. So it not a lot of viewers on the companion cast on that original day. Now, that could have been, maybe that was a low point. Maybe it got much more. I honestly tuned in one time.
Sure.
I flipped over just to take a look. And I think it was maybe they were just starting the MPO round, like a hole or so in. And I was like, oh, that's right. Ian's doing the companion cast. So I popped on. I think I saw 140. I don't know if it went way up, if it went down. I don't know. But that's what I did see.
Coincidentally, it's in my YouTube algorithm right now. Jonesboro Round 1 DGN companion stream shows that currently, a few days later after the fact, it's got just shy of 3,000 views. I can't see what the peak concurrent was. So you're probably spot on with something in that neighborhood. I'm just curious. By the way, there are two, I think, after the fact comments that say, love this coverage, and Birds of Paradise, Salmon Creek, California. That probably was an answer to some question out there, but love this coverage. Again, I'm just wondering, is it something that DGN as a company and then the companion streams should continue to monetarily or otherwise invest in?
Yes. I'm going to say yes, regardless almost of what the stats
result
say,
is
what the stats say. I think it's a really good add-on. I think it helps promote the pro subscription, because the final day you need to be a pro subscriber in order to get that.
Yeah, which, yep.
As well as the companion holes that they show, like the hole 15 that we saw. Right, that was 15, 14, 15?
Yeah, 15.
15, yeah, hole 15. Those are behind locked behind the pro subscription as well. They add value to the overall quality of the subscription. And I don't know if you can truly monetize that accurately to say, oh, look, let's use this, the number 150. On day three, Ian had 150 concurrent subscribers on DGN. Again, I'm making that number up because DGN doesn't show concurrent subscribers or concurrent viewers. Let's just say it's 150. Can the pro tour look at that and go, all right, 150? Then maybe that's 150 people that would not have signed up for pro that are signing up to watch the companion stream. You could maybe think about that in a monetary way. But I just think it adds value to it. And I know the pro tour is going to try other things. I think they're going to do like a silent stream where it's just Nats. Because that's pretty easy to do. They just literally stream it again and take out you dumb commentators. We know Ian had mentioned he's going to do two more, I think, this year. I think the Jomez boys are going to do one more this year.
Okay.
I thought the Foundation guys were supposed to do one or two this year. I don't know if they are. That was a lot of early season talk, so I can't say for sure what has changed. I do know Ian had mentioned on this broadcast that I think he's doing two more.
Okay.
So that much, I think, is pretty set in stone. But
could there be too many? And here's what I mean by that is,
because Stokely did one this weekend.
That was like an unaffiliated one, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Here's what I mean is, if my understanding is there's an open-ended invite that if like we wanted to do one, for instance, we could. My question is, let's just say there was an event, and this isn't, I don't think going to happen, but let's just say there's an event that Ian is doing a companion stream. And it happens to be a tournament that you and I love that neither of us are currently working. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to do a companion stream. My point is there a point of offering these where there's a saturation within that? Like, would it be silly to have two different companion streams going as well?
Yeah, I think you could almost have too many. Okay. I think you're right now. I think having more than one. Also, I'll call it this: more than one alternate commentary stream. Like, I think you could get away with your primary stream. We'll call it a Nats stream where you have no commentators, and then
Nats being short for natural, not G-N-A-T.
Not G-N-A-T.
So you guys
or Natty Ice or anything like that.
Maybe you'd have a few of those with it.
We could. And then having an alternate commentary stream. So kind of those three options. Other than that, I don't think you would ever want to do two alternate commentary streams. You wouldn't want to have an Ian as well as an official Stokely one or an official Smashbox one. Or it just, I think at that point, sure, you could maybe, you know, we'd get a dozen people to watch us that are hardcore Smashbox fans. But I don't see the advantage in the Pro Tour of really drawing that out now. And that's at this point. You fast forward 5-10 years, if your concurrent subscribers and concurrent viewers are in the 50, 70,000, 100,000 range, maybe. Maybe that makes more sense because you could maybe accommodate more different type of people. But at this point, I think we're too small to really kind of spread ourselves out like that. That's my personal take.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong.
All right. Well, anyway, they were out there. They're available for no better reason than just to make sure that all of our viewers and subscribers and listeners know that that's something the DGN is doing. And even by the remarks here on the board tonight, it doesn't sound like overwhelmingly people are blown away by the concept. And again, this is no value judgment on the people doing them, but just the concept. It's intriguing to me. I don't know that, I don't know. I'm different. Everyone's a little different as to when I'm not working a weekend to then feel like I'm still kind of working that weekend. when I usually then would try to fill it with 100 other things within disc golf that I would do. I don't know that that's the way I'd want to spend 2 out of my 3 days.
No,
necessarily, but maybe if it's an event that I love that I'm not involved with, like I'm not going to lie. If I were to be interested in one,
what event,
doing one,
what
like,
would you like, to do?
like a Beaver State Fling or a course I intimately know. Then again, I guess I don't even know what the style is, because
it's any, that's the thing, the common stream, it's any way you want.
That's what I mean,
it's anything you want. It's your personality.
Everybody, I'd be curious to know what everybody wants or expects out of that. That's what I think is maybe even just wading through that is probably tough.
I hate that idea. I hate thinking of what anybody expects or wants. That type of commentary stream should be you. Your personality. You shouldn't be trying to accommodate any particular, like, oh, do they want this really funny or do they want more of a serious take?
Well, yeah, but do you want play by play or do you want me just interjecting? Like, I think that's a fair question.
I think
as a play by play host day in and day out,
I think it's what you want to do
in the seat.
That's what
I'm obligated and paid to do. And maybe you want more of that, or maybe you just like me to give you.
I want from you personally. Interjections. I get to hear your play-by-play every freaking week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. I think you're very good at it. You do whatever. It's fine. I want more off the cuff, Terry. I want more. And I have ideas as far as how I would handle it. It's funny because I'm fairly certain the Pro Tour kind of runs these streams. Like Ian dials in and he's
fed the same stuff.
Correct.
We're fed in the booth is my understanding.
Exactly.
Right. The same feed.
I have different ideas on how I would like, if I were to host one, how I would like to do it. And I would want to run it right here with my own buttons. Personally, like you,
well, maybe you tell them that's what you want.
I bet you they would love that. They would look at me and go, wait, we don't need to dedicate a person to doing that. Because I've thought about it. We've done companion streams before, just whatever. I honestly debated doing one this Sunday. And I'm like, because I wasn't really doing much around the house. My son and I went for like a bike ride or something. And I was doing just offense. I'm like, I could spin one up. But then I was like, oh, wait, Stokely's doing one on Facebook. Ian's already doing one. I would feel rude almost doing one in that, like, I'm trying to take away from their scenario. So it was a very fleeting thought this past weekend, because I know Jonesboro as well as the next person that's watched it for sure. 8 or 9 years. But again, I've got a few things I want to work out and take care of and do before I would ask or, you know, to run a companion stream or do a companion stream. It's just because I'm like you. Odds are I've got something going on. You know, that's if my wife sees we have a free weekend or I have a free weekend, she's probably scheduling something for me.
All right. So that was something that came to mind, and we'll see how many more there are, and then we'll see how hard we go on them as to how well they continue to be received or get tested out throughout the year. So they're out there, they're available. DGN Pro subscription.
Yeah, go get yourself the Pro subscription,
among whatever else, all the other amazing things that gives you.
The only other news is some PDGA news. There's a new Scholastic programs launched, and you can check it out on the PDGA.com. It's the Scholastic Club Grant Program. It says here, in a grassroots effort to help grow the lifetime sport of disc golf, the PDGA Youth and Education Committee has developed a new grant focusing on school clubs. The objective of the grant program is to support and incentivize members who currently supervise or wish to supervise a school-affiliated disc golf club. Now, this, to me, does not sound like your college club. This, to me, sounds like more along a youth and education. So you're probably talking probably high school, middle school.
High school, yeah, junior high, middle school, yeah. And up. There might be
maybe even elementary school if you got a big enough organization that has, you know, a bunch of little kids that want to play. So ultimately, this is kind of addressing some of the situations that we've heard about people saying, hey, I think if we want to really grow the sport, we need to get the PDGA in at the elementary level.
Yeah, and what? In addition to that very obvious agenda and statement of getting the youth involved, this also, and I don't know how many they're going to ultimately give out, but what this also does is it can help answer a question when somebody says, hey, where is my PDGA money going? What is it being used for? How many thousands of times have you heard people say the PDGA should really do insert whatever their agenda item is? This could be on the list. And now this is a way in which they're doing that. Now, again, it says $500 grant. I'm guessing there's applications.
They'll be accepted year round and it'll be reviewed by the Youth and Education Committee.
I don't know exactly how many that is, but the fact that it's out there and it exists and is, I love it. To be fair, it's not too far. Maybe I love it because it's not too far fetched or different from something that we currently do in Wisconsin, specifically as the Wisconsin Disc Sports Association, where any event on our tour, which is right around 20 or so stops, money is collected from all those tour stops. We'll call it a tax, a $1 or $2 tax on every player. That money is pooled together. It can be anywhere from 10 to 20 to 25 grand or whatever it is at the end of the year. And then people are heavily encouraged and beat over the head to submit for various grants. And obviously education, youth in school, disc golf or disc programs in schools, course development, lots of different things fit the category. So this kind of falls along those lines, but is more channeled in the sense of going after clubs at schools or school clubs, which is awesome. Like there's a narrow focus here, and you'd be an idiot if you're not applying for it if you check those boxes. So it's nothing to lose is the way that I would look at that. So nice work by Justin Menichelli and the rest of the members that got that off and running and make that happen. Yeah, I would say that's about it in terms of actual news for now. I don't know that there's anything, you know, there's a lot of sidebars and stories and this and that have unfolded otherwise. But I feel like that covers pretty much everything we need to worry about for tonight, doesn't it?
I think it does.
Well, with that, I guess we could call it. We could call it for the regular show. And then when we come back, we can talk about a few other random things that are maybe going on in life, in disc golf, or beyond. Congratulations to our champion, who is our main guest here to open the show tonight, Anthony Barella. Thank you so much, AB, for joining us. Congratulations on the, not just this win, but the insane start that you've had to this season.
Hot.
The fact that we've seen you take down three of these events already. Kristen picking up her second event win in six events. Our only two-time champion here on the FPO side within this 2024 campaign.
I would have predicted that she would have been a two-time champion by now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people would have, and now she is, and she has a title she's going to try and defend here in Music City this weekend, and then a title she wants to defend at Champions Cup, and then I know she's headed back to Estonia for a little bit of a break, and that's going to obviously be a good thing for her as well, I'm sure. So thank you guys for joining us. It's been a lot of fun. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back for the after show, we'll talk about some disc golf topics, non-disc golf topics. We'll also have our weekly giveaway. If you're a Patreon supporter and or you've gone out to Patreon and to our website and submitted your no purchase necessary entry into our giveaway, we thank you for I've got a giveaway story actually coming up in the after show with regard to that. But for AB, along with Johnny V, I'm the Disc Golf Guy. That's Smashbox TV podcast number 502. And we'll see you in the after show when you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/SmashboxTV.
you Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.